In her more than 40 years of broadcasting, she has won countless awards, including 3 Emmys, and she has been inducted into the Broadcasting and Cable Hall of Fame and was cited by American Women in Radio and Television as one of the 50 most great women in the history of broadcasting. Ms. Roberts holds more than 25 honorary degrees, serves on the board of several nonprofit institutions, and was on the President Bush's Commission on Service and Civic Participation. In 2008, the Library of Congress named her a living legend, one of the very few Americans to have attained that honor. She's a mother of 2 and a grandmother of 6. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome and give a warm University of Illinois welcome to Cokie Roberts.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chancellor Wise. It's such a wonderful name for a university chancellor, Wise. Soon to be President Easter. I'm glad neither of you is graduating this time around, and Chairman Kennedy. It's great to be with all of you. And these fabulous musicians. You guys are terrific. Really. The musicians, the singers, it's a real treat to be able to listen to you. I actually, though, want to start by congratulating all the mothers here. This is, after all... This is, after all, Mother's Day. And I always think it's interesting when a university decides to have a graduation on Mother's Day because it kind of confirms in the minds of the graduates that they are the most important people on earth. And I know, it is your day, but it is actually still your Mother's Day. And please remember that. I am actually leaving after this graduation to go home to be with my 96-year-old mother. She is a truly remarkable woman. When I was a little girl, my father was in Congress, and she ran all of his campaigns and ran everything, you know, ran the political conventions along with the other political wives and the voter registration drives and social services in Washington along with the African-American women who were there. And then my father was killed in a plane crash, and she served 9 terms in Congress herself, so she's dedicated her life to public service. And then at the end of her career, actually at the age of 81, she took a new job in a new country as the United States Ambassador to the Vatican. And we in the family were very pleased about this because we thought it was a wonderful capstone to a career in public service, and she could serve both her country and her church, and we'd get to go to Rome all the time, and that was good. But then what happened in this country happened, and my mother found herself representing Bill Clinton to the Pope. Now think of it. It was basically the toughest job in the diplomatic service. If anybody could do it, Mama could. She then went home to her home in New Orleans, which is right smack dab in the middle of all of the honky-tonk on Bourbon Street. If you've been to New Orleans, been to Bourbon Street, you've been to Mama's house. When my own children were small, would walk past the hookers and the other neighbors and say, through the woods and over the hills to Grandmother's house we go. And and then when she moved from Bourbon Street to the Vatican, I teased her that the costumes hadn't changed. It was still men in dresses, but she was very instrumental in helping the city come back after Katrina, but finally we convinced her to move to Washington, where my brother and I live, and where she has many of her 18 great-grandchildren, so I am eager to get back and not miss a Mother's Day with her. The other person I've thought a lot about today in preparation for talking to you is one of your most distinguished alumni, Pulitzer Prize winner James B. Reston, known as Scotty, because I might not be the mother of my own children were it not for him. My husband's first job out of college was to work for Scotty Reston. And not only did Scotty spend a great deal of time saying to Steve, when are you going to marry the girl, which was, you know, key. And at the time, we were 22 and 3 by the time we got married, which was totally over the hill. And I was an old maid, and so I was, it was desperate. And but it's also true that Scotty Reston, at that point in history, was the most influential journalist in the United States of America. And he spent a great deal of time on his family. His wife, Sally, whom he met here at the University of Illinois, and his three sons were so important in his life that it was a tremendous message to my own husband, who was an aspiring journalist and has spent his life in journalism, to see that example and to understand that you could be the top of the field and still the family came first. Scotty also had a profound respect for this country. He was the son of Scottish immigrants, and he was always amazed that he was able to go to this fine institution. And he also had a tremendous respect for the people who represent this country in public office, even though he sometimes skewered them in his columns. He had a fundamental respect for them. And I think that that dedication did come from this place. It so fosters the idea of public engagement. And that was one of the many things that impressed me as I started reading up on the University of Illinois after my friend Rick Kaplan, one of your distinguished alums, asked me to come and give this talk today. Another thing that just incredibly impressed me was the very, very early commitment to people with disabilities. I really had no notion of what groundbreakers you are here at the University of Illinois in this field, showing the rest of the country how it can be done, providing the first Olympic gold medalist in a wheelchair, and really laying the groundwork for one of the major pieces of public policy in the last generation, that huge civil rights bill known as the Americans with Disabilities Act. That public policy came out of the research and the example of this institution. It was passed by a democratically controlled Congress with a Republican president, George H.W. Bush, signing it. And he said at the signing, "Let this shameful wall of exclusion finally come tumbling down." And I was excited to see that the university will be the Illinois exhibit at the Folklife Festival at the Smithsonian next month. This is a very big deal in Washington. And what the exhibit will be is an empathic exhibit to show the what experience is like for people with various disabilities. And we will be able to learn that from them. I'm feeling it a little bit myself at the moment, so I am grateful for that. But they'll also be able, while they're in Washington, to take part in the celebration of the 150th anniversary of the signing of the Morrill Act, that incredibly significant piece of legislation that established the land-grant universities. And of course, the University of Illinois was one of the first, one of that first group of land-grant universities. That law brought higher education into the reach of millions of Americans who would otherwise never have access to it. At the National Archives, where the law, of course, is housed, it says of it that it could not help but shape the nation's economic and social fabric. As I said, it's the 150th anniversary. President Lincoln signed it into law on July 2, 1862. But it should have been passed sooner. It was introduced in 1857 by Justin Morrill of Vermont, but it was the brainchild of an Illinois educator and legislator, the legislator thought someone from the East should introduce it, since it would affect the West. 1862 was also the year of the Homestead Act, which set up the farms that have spread throughout this part of the country and made the huge difference in the settlement of the Middle West. But those incredibly important pieces of legislation, which really have shaped our country and made it the country that it is today, couldn't pass in the 1850s, and they couldn't pass because of partisanship. The lead up to the Civil War, the partisanship was so great that you couldn't accomplish anything in Congress, no matter how helpful to the nation as a whole or to individual citizens it might be. Does that sound familiar? People are always asking me, is this the most partisan time we've ever had? No, it's not the most partisan time. They're not shooting each other. That's a plus. Metal detectors good here. And they really did shoot each other. I mean, the Burr-Hamilton duel was just the most famous, but they called each other out on the floor of House of Representatives and would go have duels in Bladensburg outside of Washington all the time. And by the way, think of the Burr-Hamilton duel. The sitting Vice President of the United States murdered his political enemy over political speech. Our most recent Vice President had a problem with a gun, but as far as I know, it wasn't the... But the 1850s were our most partisan time, and they culminated in war. The only way the Morrill Act passed, which created this great university, was that the South seceded. Well, we certainly don't want to repeat that, but we do need to do something. We need to do something so that our institutions that are created to make the country a better place and lives of individual citizens a better life can succeed. And I think it's up to you, you graduates of the class of 2012. You have to lead the way as you go out from this special place with your diploma in one hand and your picture with Alma in the other. You have to consider your valuable education, not only in the field that you might have chosen, but also I'd like you to think about public service, including elective office, because we need your help to fix it. I understand why people don't jump at the chance to go into politics. The politicians haven't covered themselves with glory, particularly here in Illinois. I'm from Louisiana, and we're beginning to look downright noble. We only have one former office holder currently in jail. But you know, you can't paint with a broad brush the many for the actions of the few. And you also can't expect it to get better if good people don't participate. First, in the very basic sense of voting, and I certainly hope every single solitary one of you is registered to vote. We've learned how important a single vote can be. But also, I want you to consider running. You know, we as a society have made it tough for good people to go into public office, and there's lots of blame to go around. We in the media constantly running down people in public office and giving our microphones to the shrillest voices, the people who scream on both sides rather than the reasonable people in the middle. You also bear some responsibility because you can't have good leaders without good followers. And you can't punish a person the minute you think he or she has done something that doesn't benefit you personally, or the minute they might disagree with you on something. In a country this big and this diverse, you just can't have my way or the highway. You have to be willing to listen and to move and to make compromises. The politicians themselves also bear some responsibility for the public's perception. They run against the institution where they serve, insisting they're not professional politicians, that they are amateurs. But you know, to denigrate the professional is to denigrate the profession. And those of you who are graduating in the College of Applied Health Sciences would not say, hire me, I'm an amateur. Or I certainly hope those of you in the Institute of Aviation would not say that. Saying only a non-professional should be governing us is to show a basic disrespect for government. And though I know that's popular, it's also dangerous. Nothing binds us together as a nation except our government. We have no common history, ethnicity, religion, race, or even language. Look at the rest of the world and see how easy it is to let those differences create havoc. How often do you read and hear the words ethnic strife? Only once did we let that divide us in the great tragedy of the Civil War, but we came out of it agreeing to greater political participation for more Americans. That's why respect for the Constitution and the institutions it created are so important. That's our glue, that Constitution. And the three branches all deserve respect: the executive, judicial, and yes, that first branch, Congress, with the one that's designed to bring us together. It is the Latin word for bringing together, Congress. And we need you to remind the members of Congress that that's their job. We need you, especially you women, because we've learned that the women in legislative bodies really are the people who come across the aisle and get things done. We need you to get there and do it, to save this country that's given you the opportunity that people around the world are lining up to share in. I know you'll all serve in some way or other, and you will do wonderful things for our society as a whole. Those of you in the School of Social Work will improve many lives. Those in the liberal arts and sciences will enrich our lives. Those in the media will inform our lives. Those in law will seek justice in our lives. Those in labor and employment relations will try to rationalize our lives. Those in the library sciences will ensure continued learning in our lives. Those in veterinary medicine will enhance our lives and those of our animal friends. Those in aviation will expand our lives, and those in applied health sciences will extend our lives. You will all serve, and you will do it well with the great preparation you've been afforded at this superb institution. But as you go forth, please consider the very special place of public service in the history of this nation and make some history yourselves. Bravo to all of you. On this Mother's Day, you've made your mothers proud. Thank you.